We've got two gentlemen in the studio with us this morning. Barry Lindoff, John Rogers with the Quapaw Tribe Downstream Casino, getting ready for a really big event. Barry, we're just going to kick things off with you because you do a good rundown of what's going on.
Let me catch my breath here. It's going to be quite the event. Quapaw Nation presents From the Res and Beyond Festival, and that's going on June 30th. So on Thursday, we're going to kick off the celebration to the 150th powwow with one big Indigenous arts festival. I mean, originally that's what we were going to call it, but we thought From the Res and Beyond had a little more appeal.
A little more meat to it.
But at the root of it, it is an Indigenous arts festival, all things Indigenous. We're going to kick things off with a message from Joy Harjo, the United States Poet Laureate, the first Native American Poet Laureate. Then we're going to go into Mike Bone. I don't know if you guys have watched Reservation Dogs, the sleeper hit on FX. It's coming back with season two on August 3rd.
Someone's a fan.
That's one of those shows I discovered while I've run out of everything else and I catch, but it has been the sleeper hit for FX. Reservation Dogs, if you're a fan of it, you know these guys. We're kicking it off at 12:30 with them, and we've got a whole day of entertainment, including the likes of Jonathan Joss, who you may know from Magnificent Seven, John Redcorn from King of the Hill. He will be out there. Sten Johnny, who is also on Reservation Dogs, Northern Cree, the band Indigenous, DJ Superman, The Hallucination. And don't forget, we can't have a festival without fireworks. Those are going to go on at 10 o'clock. And this is an event that goes on from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. with fireworks afterwards.
So, John, talk a little bit about the powwow itself, because 150 years, I mean, we only have so much time on the show. So try to, you know, pack it in a little bit, but give a little bit of history of the 150th powwow.
Let me preface by adding a few things. First off,
okay,
the Quapaw Nation, among many tribes, you know, it's always been about oral history. So I will probably say some things here that aren't quite 100% accurate. We have historians for that kind of stuff. We have like Risa Supernaw, Carrie V. Wilson, who have spent their entire lives dedicated to doing that. But there's three main treaties that everybody knows about with Quapaw Nation. That's the 1818 Treaty, the 1824 Treaty. Those two treaties moved the Quapaws away from Arkansas and into Oklahoma. In 1833 is when we officially signed the last treaty that moved us. There's a treaty that was signed in 1867 that's actually more known for the Senecas. It's a treaty with the Senecas, Quapaws, Wyandots. And it's one in which the Quapaws sold two chunks of their reservation that they attained in 1833 to the federal government. Unfortunately, that settlement that they got from the government didn't come through until 5 years later. Mm. So the Quapaws in 1867, the reason that they had sold those two chunks of land is because they had to ask permission to even make modifications or improvements to their reservation land. They weren't citizens at this time. That you have to remember that.
Right.
So for 5 years, you know, while they're waiting on the government, these people are starving. You know, they're literally dying off, and it was because of tribes like the Wyandots and the Osage and the Shawnee that were helping the Quapaws. You know, they were basically feeding them. Our tribe ran off to all these other reservations to make it. There was 40 people
just trying to survive.
Yeah, just trying to survive. And in 1872, when that payout came through, there was 40 tribal members left on the reservation.
Yeah.
And you know, Quapaws coming from this, you know, beautiful, rich history, but also very difficult and humble beginnings, wanted to repay what they seen as a debt to these other tribes. So in 1872, when that payment came through, they actually spent that money to have a picnic, is what they called it. And really what that turned out to be was the first Quapaw powwow. It wasn't called a powwow until the 1920s, actually. So, but yeah, there's been a – it's crazy to think about all the different – things that they used to have. They used to have rodeos at the powwow. It used to have like a Ferris wheel and
all sorts of things.
Yeah.
But it's the longest powwow in Oklahoma. It's the second longest powwow in the entire United States.
So talking to us right now was Johnny Rogers. He is the business committee communications liaison. And John, I would say you as better than anyone, except for those very few actual historians you have, know all of this history pretty well from your family.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard stories from my grandfather. I think like a lot of us, when we're younger, you know, those stories don't really click. You know, you're just kind of listening, but half listening. And then when like my grandfather passed on in 2014, it's weird, but all that stuff comes back to you, and you remember what they told you. And we're working on a book right now, and I think that's probably why Barry decided that I was the best one. Well, it's more of a publication, right? But it's you know, the title of the book is Iko on Wandagane Way, which roughly translates to the way we see it, because there has been no telling of the story from the Quapaws. It's always been by what are known as Wajini or white people. There's never been a Quapaw that's told our story. So this will be the first time that we actually tell it.
John, has there not been a resurgence in the last 10 to 15 years in tribal history and reintroducing tribal culture to your children?
Oh, I think definitely. You know, we're revitalizing our language right now. The Quapaw Post, which is, you know, has grown. We actually just had our 1 year anniversary.
That's our publication that we started for the Quapaw Nation to kind of showcase everything that's going on with all things Quapaw Nation.
Cool. But the within the Quapaw Post, we wrote a story. I think it was in April, called "Reviving a Sleeping Language," because you know we're at that point right now where we don't have many individuals that speak the Quapaw language,
mm-hmm.
But we just recently in May brought those language classes back, and it's a really big thing. Actually, Barry went to all of them as well.
Yeah, it was great. It was a
great teacher
experience, and I think that's something that we want to pass on with this Indigenous Festival as well, because some of those traditions are not being passed on mm-hmm. to the youth, and this Indigenous Festival we really want to hammer home is a youth safe place that they can come to have this event. We're not going to be serving alcohol. The festival will be there. You know, it's water, drinks like that. But we really want the youth to come and you know, just take it all in and
absorb
take it. Yeah, exactly. Indigenous culture.
Well, and there's a lot of Indigenous vendors. I mean, we're going to have over a dozen Indigenous vendors that have everything from shawls to beadwork to, mm-hmm. I mean, you name it, they've got it. And I think that's a beautiful thing is to see all it's like a gathering of nations, really.
Yeah. And it's more than just music. There are going to be Indigenous cooking displays, spoken word poems. Like I said, just a little something for everybody that we can finally get everybody here and have a festival like this. You know, because we're in the center of, what, 13 different tribes in this area?
Yeah.
And for us to never have an Indigenous event like this to showcase all that's, yeah, kind of a tragedy.
And the craziest thing is, you know, we talked about the history of the tribe and that 1867 treaty and the waiting 5 years. The Quapaws are actually in a situation like that right now, where in 2019, the federal government had a settlement with the Quapaws and agreed to pay a settlement of $137.5 million. And they're still waiting to this day for that settlement to come through. We're literally watching the U.S. government give millions, billions of dollars to other mm-hmm. countries, and they're not even, you know, living up to their obligations to Native nations.
And the heart of that of the bear is the damage from Pitcher,
uh-huh.
the undermining, everything that if people aren't aware of Pitcher, Oklahoma, and some of the ghosts of it, it really is. It's what was it, the number one Superfund site in the United States?
Mm-hmm. I think it should also be noted that Quapaw Nation is, I believe, the only tribe that has a Superfund site on its reservation.
Yeah.
So it's really weird. And like you said, Barry, a tragedy that our U.S. government is now repeating this history of making an obligation to one of our Indigenous tribes.
Right.
And then blowing them off.
Yeah. I think I said before we went on the air, it's kind of a bottleneck of history happening this week with the 150th.
It's a reminder,
and really, in a history repeating itself.
I'm glad that you're having events like this to try to capture the attention of the youths.
Yeah.
And so that maybe you can help them appreciate their culture and their history. When, you know, like we said before, when you're young, you really don't care about that stuff. I remember hearing stories from my grandparents about whatever, you know, their family and, you know, uncle this and aunt that and grandma whatever. But it didn't mean anything to me until you get older and now you start beginning to appreciate it.
Right.
And we can only hope that our young children from indigenous tribes will grow soon to appreciate this,
pieces of those cultures,
revitalize the language, revitalize the culture, because it would be a travesty to lose that.
Right.
That's the first thing I thought about when we left that first language class is, you know, this is something that I'm going to be able to teach my children. This is something that I'm going to be able to push on them. Because like you said, whenever we're younger, we don't pay attention to what our grandparents say or what our, you know, and I'm sure that they were thinking the same thing, you know, like, man, I wish that they would have paid attention a little bit sooner and learned from these mistakes like I did. But once you age, you're thinking the same thing. Man, I hope my children are listening. I really do.
Well, and you pointed out, like, early in the interview about how, you know, these powwows, these get-togethers, these picnics, it's all about the storytelling. Mm-hmm. It's got to make it also a little bit easier for those kids to maybe absorb it because it is a storytelling type environment.
I mean, there's a lot going on. The Quapaws have actually been known. We've gathered different ideas from other tribes, you know, and kind of introduce that to our tribe. And that's why you see at the powwow that there's a lot of, you might be like, oh, well, the gourd dance, that's the Kiowa that do that. That wasn't the Quapaw that introduced that. But it's something that we've kind of collected along the way. And there's an honor and a respect that goes along with that. But yeah, you see, I mean, I remember being a little kid and rolling down that hill at the Quapaw powwow. And, you know, last year I got to see my children doing it. It brought back a memory.
That's cool.
I mean, but it's, you know, it's one. It's just one of those things.
Barry, what's the date again of this coming up?
So the Indigenous Festival is June 30th. It's at Downstream, the outdoor venue, starting at 10 a.m. Tickets start at $20. However, if you're 16 or below or an elder, it's free. Like I said, we are really wanting to make this a community event. 10 a.m. it starts. 10 p.m. it wraps, and then the fireworks afterwards, and that's going on at Downstream. And then the Quapaw Nation powwow starts on the 1st and goes to the 4th.
Oh, cool. So basically 5 days of
culture
and celebrating.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And we kick it all off this Thursday. So
it's going to be a fun week.
Yeah.
And some good food, too.
Good food.
Yeah, we're all about food.
Going on.
Exactly.
Great food.
Like I said, Thursday we will have a chance to try all kinds of indigenous food and you know, fry bread, Indian tacos, those types of things.
I think Chairman put it that way when he was telling the story of, you know, the 1867 treaty and then finally getting the funds in 1872. And that's why we're so big on food, is because we were starving. Our ancestors were starving. And now they've got this money to buy food. You know, they finally have an opportunity to eat again. And so that's something that might just be kind of in the back of our head subconsciously. We're thinking about, oh, we got to have food. You know, we got to have the best food around because, you know, that's what we didn't have.
And I will say this, it's good food. It's good food. So
very good.
Definitely go out there and check it out.
Representing the Quapaw tribe with us this morning, the communications director, Barry Lindiff, John E. Rogers, the business committee communications liaison, all from the Quapaw tribe. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here this morning. Looking forward to a busy and fun weekend.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
We've got more coming up on the show. Don't go anywhere.